Welcome to the Sons of Mjolnir podcast.
The Sons of... what?
This isn't your Sons of Macaroni, yeah!
The Sons of Mjolnir?
This is Sons of Mjolnir,
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Sons of Mjolnir. As always, I am one of your hosts, Fat Thor.
I'm Gorgon. We are back today. We have a very special guest for us, a friend of the podcast who we're so excited to have on for y'all. We always love when we get to have friends on and introduce them bigger to the comic world. Y'all know them on Twitter as Ultimate Warrior. We know them as Colton Dotson. Warrior Colton, how are you today, our friend?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm super excited to be here.
So we wrote Boneheads, right? That's what it is. Boneheads we're getting into?
Yes.
How did you come up with the name Boneheads?
Well, it's funny because it wasn't initially called Boneheads. When I first came up with it, the original name was Boners.
But, you should have kept it.
Right. I thought about it. But then I got into it and I was like, you know, I just don't know how many people are going to be super amped up to buy a book called Boners. And I didn't want to limit the people who would want to work on the book by saying, hey, like, I really want you to come and work on this book. Oh, what is it called? Boners. So I had that title in my head, but I put work, like when I did the script, I did the working title is Boneheads. And I was going to clear it with the other creators on the project before we called it Boners. But I think we all just kind of fell in love with the name Boneheads. So we ended up just sticking with that one.
I love that. That's a hell of a name for your first comic, but it's not really your first comic, right? We were kind of talking about this a little bit before the show for us, and you know the deal. You're a longtime fan of the show. We love to get into everybody's comic origin story. So tell us about your comic origin story and the other things that have led you up to this point along the way before we jump deep into Boneheads.
So it actually started when I was around 6 or 7. My dad had this friend named Lance who was going through a divorce and was getting rid of a bunch of stuff. And he had this whole like army footlocker full of comics from the late 70s to the early 90s. And so my first introduction was Secret Wars, the Who's Who and the Marvel Universe. So I was reading the biographies and the powers and at the same time going through and reading like the 1980s Superboy and the first Booster Gold run. Mm-hmm. And then it led from there to while I had all those as like a backlog, plus a bunch of the Amalgam stuff was in there, which was fantastic. I always loved Dark Claw. But it really kicked in when the Ultimate series came out because you could buy them at Walmart. And I grew up in a place that didn't have a comic store nearby. And so being able to walk into Walmart and buy like Ultimate X-Men and Ultimate Spider-Man with my own money was really what pushed me into reading comics. And it started then. And so here we are, 23 years later, still deep into the comic game.
Nice. I think I had like maybe one comic book store in my hometown growing up, and I didn't know about it until like I was a late teenager. I had to do the same thing if I wanted to purchase them with Walmart or read them at a friend's house. And then X-Men. Do we have a checklist going, Thor, of all the different people our age generation who are like their starting ones were X-Men or Spider-Man?
Literally every single person, I think. Like every creator we've had on here has shouted out X-Men, whether it's the Claremont run or Grant Morrison. Like everyone shouts out X-Men, which is like, I mean, it's everyone's starting point. We were just talking about this too, and we were also just talking about, I think, also the Ultimates too, especially with people around our age range. Like the Ultimates were huge when we were kids, and we're seeing kind of a resurgence with that right now with Ultimate Spider-Man, Ultimate Black Panther. Those books are like going freaking crazy right now, so it feels like everything is like coming full circle.
That I feel like a kid again with all the books that helped get me into comics back on the shelves.
Yeah, 100%. So obviously, you know, obviously we're all comic fans here. That's kind of how we got to know each other, how we developed a relationship. But I'm also curious. So this book not only shows your love of comics, but I also can tell that you're also showcasing some of your other loves here as far as like heavy metal and horror movies, which I know you're a big fan of. So I also want to just ask a little bit about that kind of origin story part of your life, you know, as far as horror movies go, heavy metal, like how did that all start and why did you decide to incorporate that into this book?
No, I grew up out in the middle of nowhere. And so we didn't really, like, I didn't have high speed internet until I went to college at, 2012. Mm-hmm. And so where we grew up at, there was not much to do except watch movies and, read and listen to music. And so my dad had this crazy collection of horror movies, everything from Texas Chainsaw Massacre, all the way up to newer stuff. And so that's what me and him would do. We would and watch horror movies. When I was in the, God, that was 2003, so I'd have been in the third grade. My dad checked me out of school to drive to the next town over to go and watch Jason X.
Classic.
He also did the same thing for, he did the same thing for Clerks 2. But no, he actually is a big reason why I got into all the stuff that I did. My dad was a huge metal fan in the 80s. His favorite band's AC/DC, but he got me into Slayer and Metallica. And then by the time I hit the fifth or the sixth grade, when I started skating, me and all my friends really got into punk music. And then from there, it just progressed into heavier and heavier stuff. And so really everything from, you know, like 80s hair metal to Blink 182 all the way to some of the death grind and bands like that. Now it was a big progression down the rabbit hole metal.
Hell yeah, I love that. We talk about all the time the kind of correlation between, you know, comics and music and how, you know, there's such strong correlations there, especially, I mean, we were literally just talking about this like 20 minutes ago, like Kid Cudi's writing a comic now. Slash is writing a comic with Tim Seeley, which is like insane. So there's definitely a crossover between comics and music very heavily.
Max Bemis, the lead singer of Say Anything, was putting out comics. I don't know what he's done recently, but he did Heavy from I think it was from Boom, and then I think he wrote on Moon Knight as well. It's a running joke between me and my wife that he's the reason that me and her are married and have kids, because I was going to see him on the night of his 10th anniversary of the In Defense of the Genre show. He got laryngitis and couldn't be there, and so I ended up meeting up with this girl I was talking to, and that was 7 years ago, and now we're married with two kids.
Wow. But, yeah,
the correlation between... correlation between music and comics, hand in hand.
Everything.
Gerard Way as well.
Mm-hmm.
With things coming back full circle, there's been a massive full circle push, you know, because it sounds like we're all around the same age, you know, about 10-ish. You know what? I guess I'm going to be really old here. I guess about like 14, 15 years ago when we were all in high school, God, that feels ancient. I really noticed that zombies started coming back to like the pinnacle of where they were. And then from that, we started seeing skulls and things become pinnacle again. And then I feel like that made horror music and horror movies and your metal and all these things kind of just have the skulls coming back in fashion. And what do we know? We have a writer who grew up through that. I listened to that kind of music coming out with a comic called Boneheads. It's very zombie-esque. So like, let's get into it. You have a brand new comic, Boneheads, coming out that you're writing, Colton Dotson. You've got a really cool group of people on with you. Greg Warnjack, is that right?
Warnjack, yes.
Yeah, on your art. You've got your colors are being done by Barlow Morea, your logo, your variant cover, all that being, Joel M. Saavedra, is that right?
Yes.
So you've got a hell of a team on this brand new comic. Tell us about it. What is Boneheads?
I guess the best way to start off that question is with another question. And that is, do y'all know how much a skull sells for, like a real human skull?
Are you asking me? Am I supposed to pretend that I haven't read the previews so I don't know the answer to that?
Yeah. we'll do it. We'll keep on pushing it. It goes anywhere from 1,000 to 5,000, and there are literally no laws unless you live in Tennessee or Vermont against the selling of human bones in the country. And so, with that in mind, I decided that it would be, because I also learned about Burke and Hare around the same time I learned that. And Burke and Hare was a pair of grave robbers who were robbing graves to sell to doctors back in the 1800s. And I just thought it would be neat seeing kids who find out that an easy way to make money would be grave robbers and then decide to become grave robbers and sell the bones. But for our super lucky protagonist, they stumble upon a magic amulet in a mausoleum, and it has the power to, if you have enough will or the enough want for something, it can bring it to fruition. And because Simon wants money and wants those bones out of the ground, he wills the entire graveyard back to life. And so now it is Simon and Teddy and another character, which you'll meet, her name is Allie, fighting a group of the undead against to save the town that they hate. And that's the broadest way that I can put it. Like I said, it's a love letter to all of the things that I really loved. Comics, especially, we were talking about things going full circle. EC comics are coming back. And that is, it's a lot of the themes and stuff come from those old EC comics, which on the variant cover that Joel did, you can see we set it up to look like the old EC comic covers. Mm-hmm. And then, like I said, it comes full circle, but it's little things like that. And you said the music, all of it kind of, that it's a love letter to those things. And it's, especially for my first comic, I wanted to put out something that I love. And it's something that I wanted to, if I was walking through a comic shop and I saw it, like, I'd want to pick it up and read it. And that's kind of what I'm going for with this book, because I want people to read it and enjoy it. But at the end of the day, I'm making the book something that I want to read.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that's when you get the best stories, because I'm not writing for an audience. An audience that I am writing for is me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hoping that, you know, as much as I enjoy it, I'm hoping other people will as well.
Yeah, and I 100% agree. I am a firm believer in that, you know, when you make something for yourself, like, people inherently just kind of respond to that. Like, there's something about art or, you know, writing or something when you know, make it from a very true place. Like I said, people can pick up on that. And in the same respect, people can pick up when it's not real and it's kind of phony, right? So I think that's a great attitude to have. And I definitely felt that through reading the book. Like, that's why I asked you about the kind of heavy metal and the horror movies, because you can feel the kind of love that you have for these things with these two characters. And that's something I wanted to ask you about too, which we talked a little bit about before we started recording here, but just for the people at home who didn't get to hear the conversation, something I really loved about this the preview pages we got to read was the relationship between Simon and Teddy. And like we were talking about, the dialogue between them felt very natural, very real. And I was saying that's, you know, very impressive for especially a first time comic book writer, you know, to have dialogue feel that natural. So can you just kind of talk a little bit about the relationship between Simon and Teddy without spoiling too much with where we're going, but why those characters?
So both of them are set up after real life people. Teddy being modeled after my best friend. His name is Bryce. And so Simon has a lot of my bad habits, and Teddy has a lot of my good habits, and also all of my friends' like good traits. And so a lot of their dialogue is stuff like I was telling you, like when I wrote it down, I would read it, and I would look at it from outside, like if that's something that felt natural. And my conversations with Bryce, I mean, we can pretty much complete each other's sentences. And so it really, like, the conversations really kind of mirror the way that we would talk to each other in real life. And so that was definitely helpful when it came down to it. And if so, you hear him on the, I think, the third page where Teddy calls Simon Madison, which is an inside joke between me and Bryce, because Bryce's middle name is Madison and he absolutely hates it. And I, in high school, I would make fun of him for it all the time. And so even though Teddy is based on him, I gave Simon his middle name. And the names actually are kind of important as well. Simon, his last name is King. And that is direct relationship with Joe Simon and Jack Kirby, Jack King Kirby.
Love it.
And then Teddy, on the other hand, his name came along afterwards. And when I was creating the characters, I created Teddy, I created Simon, I created Allie. And I was like, man, those names flow really well together. I really like it. And it wasn't until about halfway through writing I realized I named my three main protagonists after Alvin and the Chipmunks, Allie, Simon, and Teddy, which is short for Theodore. So that's where those three come from. I like I said, I tried to make the names kind of an homage to things that I love. And so that's why Simon's middle name is Madison, which that it'll never get explained in the book. It's something that I threw in just for me and Bryce, but now that y'all know, y'all get to laugh at it too.
I love that.
Sons of
That's gonna
Milner
make it
exclusive.
really fun in reading. You should reveal that one day in like when you publish a volume of this, like have it in there and like write author's notes. I just to give people context after they read the book, that way they have to go back and reread it with that in mind.
And you were talking about the imagery in the book. One thing that I got with Greg on, and before I go any further, I just want to shout out my co-conspirators on the book. Greg Warrenshaw, he is from Canada. He is absolutely incredible. When I first saw his portfolio, I knew he was going to be perfect for the project. He used to do storyboarding for some PBS shows and decided he wanted to break away from that and go out on his own. And I found him and we immediately hit it off. He read the script and he loved it. And so we started collaborating really quickly and he is churning pages out and they look fantastic. And once we got everything kind of squared away, we started looking for a letterer and a colorer. We ended up finding our letterer, Joel Saavedra. He is Joel Saavedra. He is from Argentina. And I saw his work and just he had this one bubble that reminded me of a Judge Death dialogue bubble from the Judge Dredd series. And I snapped him up as soon as I could. And then once we got him on, like I said, he designed the logo. He drew and colored the variant cover. He is absolutely incredible. He has every like I keep on telling the guys, and I'll get to Barlow as well, but they could make this book without me. I could not make this book without them. And then Barlow, he is from Brazil. He's from right outside of Rio, and he has been doing coloring for a while now. He also does his own art as well. But he did this Hellboy. Hellboy's probably my favorite and always will be. But he had this Hellboy page that he did, and it had everything I wanted in the colors, and so I snapped him up. And like I said, they are all super talented. They've been doing this a lot longer than I have, but all of them have jumped in and loved the story. And it's super helpful having people on board that are also really into the story. And so we've got a really great creative team, and I'm super lucky to be working with these guys.
That. How did you meet? Was it just the internet just connected you guys?
So I talked to a couple of people before I even got started, because I already had the script written. So I had done my part, and I wanted to, that was what I wanted to get out of the way first. So once it was written, I asked around, and people were telling me, you know, oh, you can go on like Comics Experience. There's Discords you can go on to. Well, I put feelers out on Twitter, and it got, it ended up getting retweeted and had a lot of hits on it. And I looked through a lot of people's art, and it was really great. But like I said, when I came across Greg's, the second or third picture in his portfolio were these skeletons chasing after some people. And I knew I was going to have a lot of skeletons in the undead. So as soon as I saw that, I messaged him immediately afterwards. So that was late October, early November. And we had the rest of our team by the end of December. And we've been pushing through it there. We're looking at a summer release. So on art, we are we're over halfway done on art and letters, and Barlow is coming up fast with the colors behind them. So like I said, we're looking at a summer release, but I couldn't do this without them. And if they're watching, love you guys.
Say, that's pretty quick. That's a pretty quick turnaround. And like I said, based off the preview page, so I got to see the preview pages, which weren't colored, which I think, you know, gave me a really good sense of Greg's art, which was really, really great. And then I saw the other pages that you sent me that are colored, and the colors just really pop. So like I kind of got to see both sides of it, and it just, it all came together really, really well. And like you said, I love how you're shouting out the creative team, because we talk about all the time about how comics are very much a collaborative effort between everybody. And shout out Joel as well, the letterer too, because I feel like letterers are one that don't often get the credit that they deserve. But yeah, like I said, the creative team, you guys really did a great job. And I'm so, you know, like I said, very surprised. That's a very quick turnaround for a book.
I told myself last year that I'm going to do it. I set the money aside for everything that I needed, and I'm going to do it. And then by the time December came around, I had the co-conspirators assembled. It started to feel a little bit more real. And then we got, I guess, right around my birthday, Greg hit the halfway point and Joel got it lettered. And I'm starting to see it like come to life, and it still doesn't feel real. it's so weird. And it is, it's coming along super fast. Because one thing that I wanted to do before we started the Kickstarter is, I've seen a lot, especially in the past couple of years, of people getting burned on Kickstarters. And that is a huge bummer, because that not only pushes people, newer people, away from the Kickstarter, but also it taints or puts a bad taste in people's mouth who would normally back Kickstarters, but had something like that happen. So my goal before we even started the Kickstarter, and I talked with the team about it, was we're going to have the book almost ready to go to the printer before the Kickstarter even begins. And so we're looking at a really fast turnaround time as far as shipping and all that. We're getting together on what we're planning on doing for tiers. Greg does a lot of his art on paper and then scans it, and so we're going to have some original art tiers. We're going to have some of the get drawn in tiers. I'm having my partner, she's making these absolutely adorable crocheted skull and crossbone plushes that we're going to put in some of them as well. But before, because I don't want people to think that there's a chance they won't get it. I want people to know what they're getting and that they're going to get a good product in a timely manner. Because out of all the Kickstarters that I've backed, the ones that I think about often are the ones that had a great product, had it get back in time. A big shout out to Aaron Reese, who does Black Blizzard, and Eric Palicki, who does Atlantis Wasn't Built for Tourists, and a few other ones. Both of them had the books out within like 3 weeks of the Kickstarter ending. And I think about that all the time. And so that's something that I want to, when I build up a fan base of readers, is I don't want them to just come because I've got a cool book. I want them to know that that cool book's going to come and they're going to get to enjoy it as quick as possible. And so we are coming along. We are coming along quick, but it's been a long journey to get to this point. And so seeing it come together as quick as it has is really great. And I'm excited for everybody to get a chance to read it.
Yeah, I
Hell
mean,
yeah.
I can't wait to finish to read the whole thing myself. Obviously, we talked about it already. You're a longtime comic fan, longtime metal fan, all this stuff. So what was really kind of the spark to jump into writing comics? I'm sure all of us have, you know, written little scripts and like, oh, like this is a great idea for a comic book, right? But and you, like I said, you touched on this a little bit about how you had the money put away, like you decided that you want to do it. What made you jump in with 2 feet to really get this book going?
Y'all are gonna laugh. I'd already been thinking about the book, and even before I started putting the money away, I kind of had the idea for this book for a couple of months, just floating around in my head. And then there's this show called I Think You Should Leave, and there's the skit.
I
there's
love it.
The skit in the show. In fact, you read it on the first page. The bones are their money. Tim Robinson. I saw that skit.
Yes.
And I laughed. I laughed so hard.
Exactly. The bones are the skeleton's money. In our world, bones equal dollars. That's why they're coming out tonight to get their bones from you.
And the bones are their money. Just like, yeah, no, it's perfect. I'm writing that book right now. And I grab my little composition book that I do all my writing in. And for like 3 or 4 weeks, I just wrote down every idea that I had. And then the next couple of months, just scratched all of that out and started over. but yeah, it's that was there was already kindling for the fire. But that skit in particular sparked the kindling and made me put paper or put pen down to the paper.
You were like, this story needs to be told. I love it so much. I love that skit so much too.
It's one of those things where, just like I said, the story was there, but then as soon as I saw that skit and had the story bouncing around, I immediately picked it up. And it was always going to be a horror book, but as soon as it popped into my head like that, I wanted to do a horror comedy, which I think is one of the best genres you can do, especially if you hate yourself, because not only is horror difficult to pull off, but so is comedy. And so I figured I would dive into that first before I do my romantic slice of life comic next.
Hell yeah. It sounds like you took a lot of the things that you really enjoyed as not just from your life or inspiration, right, in it growing up, but also like the things you enjoy as a fan to try to give your fans, right, like with your different Kickstarter packages and all. Like, how much time did you spend sitting down being like, okay, these are the things that I enjoyed, how can I do that better? Like, did that take a lot of time to get your plan together? Because it sounds like you had a pretty solid plan from the get-go.
It really did. It came along about the same length as writing. So as far as preparation, from seeing that skit and having the story kicking around, it probably was 6 months until I had the first script completed. Then that was rough draft, the final draft, all of that. And so I don't know, what it really came down to was I wrote down the things from other Kickstarters that I've enjoyed. I love bookmarks. I love little things like that. And I think we'll try and do more stuff on the next campaign, but I wanted to do some stuff that I think people would enjoy, but also not do too much. Cause we're going to have three covers. Adrian Kalerick, who does Tracovi, he is doing the third cover, and we'll have that coming out soon as well. So we're going to do the three covers, and then I wanted to do little things that were easily achievable. Like, my wife loves Fibercraft, so I knew it would be easy. We found a pattern, and she can whip them up, I think, in like 2 or 3 hours. They're about fist sized. And so I thought that would be neat. One of the things I thought about doing, but I haven't decided yet, is her dad has these really cool like resin molds, and you can make little skulls in them. And I was thinking about doing little skull paperweights as well.
Yeah, we do.
And then... And then I'm going to have I wrote this down. It's the dumbest tier. And if anybody backs it, I'll be surprised, but it's there for them. It's the lifetime package. And so for $500, for the rest of my life, any book that I write or that has my name on it gets sent directly to you. Plus, you get to be one of the members of the band in the book, USSRI, which is Steve and his shithead friends, which I can't wait for y'all to get to meet shithead Steve. He's the most wholesome character in the whole book. He's Allie's boyfriend. He's the lead singer of USSRI, formerly Steve and the Shitheads, formerly the Ass Kicking Fat Kids.
I love it.
Listen, as the depressed trans girl in the room, you've sold me at USSRI, right? Gold, you get the award.
I don't know why nobody's named their band that yet. There's so many depressed communists out there.
I love it. I love it so much. You touched on this just recently. So you said you did a horror and a comedy book because you hate yourself. So I want to ask you, we've had a couple other horror writers on here. And I don't know, for me, the process of writing a horror story fascinates me because we've talked about how in movies, a lot of the scare and the suspense come from the music and the score and stuff, things of that nature. And when you're writing, you don't have a lot of those same tools. And I would imagine that the same kind of applies to comedy as well. So I'm just curious, when you're writing this book, as far as the horror elements that you want to incorporate to it, how do you kind of go about that? Are you kind of conscious of that, of the differences of activating, I guess, a scare, or kind of in what's the word, inviting that feeling of suspense?
I think the big difference in it is, as far as movies go, you said you can have music, you can have the jump scares, and you don't have those two tools at your disposal when you're writing horror. And so when I want to portray something as horrifying, I think about things that are relevant and real. So the undead in this book are not the scariest things in this book. They are more or less a plot device. And as horrifying as they seem, they're much more horrifying people that are alive in the book. I think that's why comedy and horror can complement themselves the way that they do. Comedy is just tragedy plus time, and horror is just tragedy in real time. And so I wanted to create, especially with the writing, I wanted to create a sense of eeriness, just a sense of dread. While there are jokes, and you can tell that the characters are funny and they're friends, there's a sense of foreboding always lying in the background, especially because they're high school kids, and so they don't realize the consequences of their actions. And so you see them with this devil may care attitude, but the whole time you can see the guillotine falling. And so I think the best way to pull off horror in writing is suspense, because you don't have, like I said, you don't have the jump scares. I think there are books that can pull them off well, but I think it's super difficult. And so what I've tried to do with the horror is make it personal, the things that would horrify me, being trapped, being in tight, enclosed spaces, feeling like there's no escape. I feel like those are real, tangible fears, and that those are the ones that I try to go for in writing. And I try to stay away from really cheap ones. Especially because every character, all three of the main characters in the book have their own different traumas. Teddy is from a highly abusive and drug addicted family. Simon, he comes from a well-off family, but everybody in the house hates each other and ignores him, like he's not even there. And then Allie, she lives with her grandparents because her parents died in a horrific car accident. And so, because those are all three terrible things that terrify me. I'm absolutely terrified of car wrecks. I've been in a couple of them and had to do therapy over it. And so that terrifies me. And then I've been around abusive homes, not my family's great. Like, I love my family, but I've seen the effects of abusive homes, especially when like drugs are involved. And so like that's Teddy's trauma. And then Simon's trauma stems from, it's the reason that he's so outlandish and loud and always seeking attention, is because he doesn't feel seen at home. And he's overseen everywhere else. So the only person that can actually stand him is Teddy. So they're fantastic. But I wanted to portray the things that terrified me in real life onto the page, and have it to where the people reading it, and not even so much reading the words, but seeing the scenes and stuff that I've set them in. We are going to have a lot of, especially at the end of the first issue, a lot of blacks and a lot of negative spaces, and trying to incorporate that as much as we can, in moments that are supposed to be terrifying in the book. Cause that was one of the things I talked with the color about. I was telling him, I was like, well, look, I was like, there's going to be a lot of dark. I was like, so when we go with the undead, I was like, I want them to have kind of a different palette. And he was like, well, what are you thinking about? And I was like, man, this is going to sound really, really dumb. And then I just sent him like 10 different pictures of Madballs. Y'all remember Madballs?
I think so, yeah.
I was just like, yeah, I was like, you see how these are slimy and goopy looking? Like, let's do that. And let's make everything else dark and scary. And so the zombies will, or the, I say zombies, the undead will look goopy and outlandish, while everything else will be set in kind of a more serious setting. But yeah, that's how I've tried to put the horror in there.
Yeah, like I said, I love that. And I love like just the process of, like I said, writing horror and these different genres, especially me, because I mostly read like superhero comics is, you know, kind of my bread and butter. So getting into different genres always just kind of fascinates me, of kind of like we said, the different kind of toolbox that you use. So
yeah,
we've
had a big year for you. We've got you into horror. We've got you into like cyberpunk level stuff, man. We've had a big year for you. Look at you, buddy.
I'm always learning. Oh. I'm a student of the game. I'm a student of the game. Always learning.
Gorgon, I did see on the last episode that you were a big fan of the cyberpunk stuff. I don't know if you've read it, but Thumbs by Hayden Sherman and Sean. I have his name on. I need to go over on my shelf and grab it. But it was an Image book from 2018 and absolutely fantastic. If you haven't read it, I'm going to have to look up. He did Clan Killers and Coyotes. And now I can remember his book, but I can't remember his name.
You're going to have to send me a link to that.
I'm going to have to. He's writing King Spawn. Sean. Yes.
I'm gonna edit a picture of him right up here. So when this video comes out, everyone else will know. But
yeah, Thumbs is one of my favorite cyberpunk books of all time. I think it's 8 issues, and 2 of them were double sized.
Okay.
But yeah, it was. I know Hayden Sherman does the art.
Now I'm about to look it up.
Y'all can just add that, fix that in post.
You would be so surprised at how often this exact thing happens, and we're like, wait, we have to Google it. This happens all the time.
Regularly. Now, you come like on, right. Thumbs, but we always like asking our people on for things like, what are you reading right now?
As Christopher Lewis,
a fan of comics, who's writing comics, what are you reading right now?
So I just actually finished up Akira for the first time. I bought the box set and went through all 6 volumes. I am also going through Chip Zdarsky's Spider-Man, because I don't know if anybody encapsulates Spider-Man as well as he does on a personal level. Mm. And I've read great Spider-Man stories. Chip just gets Peter. I've been getting caught up on the Energon universe that we have going on at Image, and it's Void Rivals, G.I. Joe, Duke, not Snake Eyes, Cobra Commander, and the Transformer books. That whole that whole thing just speaks to me. Mm-hmm. Also, The Weatherman, Volume 3, which I did not know was coming out. The Weatherman is a fantastic, if you, here's another great cyberpunk one, Gordon. If you haven't read The Weatherman, it's got three volumes. I think it's Neil Vindrell, Sebastian Gerner. There's one other whose name I can't remember right now, but I'm looking at the book on my shelf. It is another great one. I also just finished up Dreadstar, Dreadstar is Jim Starlin's Star Wars on Acid book.
Is such a perfect explanation.
I blazed through it, but other than that, I keep my pool list pretty full. I've gotten to save a little money as far as Marvel and DC goes with their apps, which mm-hmm. is great because my pool list was getting outlandish and crazy. And so I try and buy a lot of my indie books, Image and stuff like that. I try and stay up to date on those as well as I can. And so I've also speaking of indie books, another thing I just got done reading was Jared Lujan's Southbound, his Kickstarter that he did. Top notch work. That man is always on top of the game. I love it. But yeah, definitely check out Thumbs.
Yeah, and I also love, speaking of cyberpunk, I don't know if you checked out the most recent cyberpunk miniseries that just ended, but that was really good. I loved that by Bartosz, our boy Bartosz.
I have not. I will definitely have to look them up.
Yeah, definitely.
They just need to give him money. They just need to literally like hand him a blank check and say, just keep doing what you're doing and don't stop.
Bartosz is the man. We love him. Since we're talking about like these other books and stuff like that, I got to ask you very quickly before we get out of here, just because it's something that we both share a love for, and we already mentioned him earlier in the pod, but I got to ask you about the King Kirby. I know that you have a deep love of Kirby comics and Fourth World and all that. So can you just kind of, just like I said, very quickly, just kind of touch on just what does the King mean to you, you know, the influence that he's had on you?
It's hard to even put into words that Jack Kirby is everything that I love about comics. You can trace back to him. It's the same way I feel about Black Sabbath with metal music, where just their influence alone has spawned just, 80 years of comics. I mean, Fantastic Four, Captain America, Orion, Darkseid, all of the New Gods. I mean, I named my son Orion, I remember when I found Jack Kirby for the first time. I mean, like I said, I had read Fantastic Four, I read a lot of the stuff that he'd done, but I remember jumping into Fourth World for the first time, and it opened up my mind to what comics could do. His work was so ahead of its time. And you really get that sense when you read The Eternals or you read his Fourth World. His world building was just absolutely mind-blowing. And his legacy is still felt today. I mean, there's not one creation that he put his hands on that isn't still... I mean, Black Panther. We got Black Panther. We've got OMAC. He did The Sandman. Which I want to say Sandman was before him, but he brought it back. But no, just all the work that he did and the influence that he's had. Plus, the man was a war hero. And if there's one thing I love more than comics, it's people who have no fear of punching a Nazi in the face.
Damn right.
And Jack Kirby is a Nazi punching badass. War hero, comic creator, just all around badass. And so Jack Kirby means a whole lot to me. Everything I do and that every bit of my writing is influenced by not just him, but in a long list of creators that I've fallen in love with over the years. Walter Simonson and his Orion, speaking of Kirby, his Orion run that he did for DC, is 26 issues of absolute just beauty. It's, Walter Simonson is somebody that I put up there next to Kirby as far as storyteller or illustrator goes, because he has just that, they both had a very visionary view of comics, and that really bleeds down into being a big influence on me. And so, like I said, it's almost indescribable how Jack Kirby has influenced me. But I mean, you look at everything since like the 1950s, and the stuff that he had a hand in is what influenced the writers. That, I mean, he really is what H.P. Lovecraft is to horror. He is to the superhero genre, just not a super racist, which is also cool.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a bigger plus for sure. But yeah, I love that so much. Like, I mean, I think whether or not you know it or not, if you're a fan of comics, you are a fan of Jack Kirby. You may just not know it. But ever since, like, you know, similar to you, when I really started digging deep into Kirby's work and just kind of his philosophy on creating and everything.
He created this character. I don't know if you've heard of him. Thor?
I don't know. I've heard a little bit about him. But yeah, which, speaking of, you probably know this. Fourth World was actually originally supposed to be a Thor story. It was supposed to be like a Ragnarok type story. But that's when his deal with Marvel went sour. So he took it to DC. So I will forever, until I die, have like a small bit of beef with Marvel, just because we'll never get to see what that might have looked like, the Thor Fourth World story, which I dream about. I wasn't born yet when that even happened, and I dream about it to this day.
Well, when the old gods die, the new gods will arise.
Exactly.
And like you said, if you love comics, you love Kirby. And if you haven't had a chance to read, and I always butcher his last name, but Tom Scioli, his King Kirby illustrated autobiography, The Life and Times of the King, top-notch stuff. You really get a better understanding, and it will paint your view of Stan Lee a little bit, but...
That's a whole other, that could be a whole episode of discussion.
That could be a whole series, right? We could do a whole 6-episode sub-series on that alone, if we're being honest, right? If we wanted to truly tell the history.
Of Stan Liebowitz.
I think that's the series, if we did, would have comic fans just turn on us really, really quick.
Yeah. We'd have a lot of people be like, "Oh god!"
I was going to say, you know that Funky Flashman from the Fourth World is Stan Lee. Funky Flashman.
Yeah, I've always said, you know, with that whole situation, it's like, you know, it's a he said, she said. You know, there's so many different versions of the story, but I think at the end of the day, whether or not Stan created as much as he may have said he did, the man was a salesman, and like he sold the comic, right? And it's like Marvel would not be where it was without him selling the way he did. So I think it both of them were necessary. Like, you couldn't have, this wouldn't have happened without both of them, no matter how you slice up the creative pie of it. But yeah, like I said, that could be a cool episode.
Now, Tom also did a Stan Lee book that I need to order so I can read it too. But yeah, undeniably, both of them are some of the biggest, had some of the biggest hands in comics, next to, you know, like Bill Finger or Gil Kane.
I also love how you shouted out the Walt Father, because everyone on this pod knows that I love the Walt Father with everything that I have. So.
I have Beta Ray Bill, the big-ass action figure that I'm looking at right now.
Yes, Bill, my boy.
The the first book that I read to my son when he was born was the volume one of Walt Simonson's Thor run while we were in the hospital.
I love today, that, dude.
He's been transfixed by Hellboy the past couple of days. And I told him, I was like, man, I can't wait until you can read. I've got so many Hellboy books. And he looked me dead in the eyes and he said, Dad. And I said, yeah. And he goes, will you read them to me? And like, I've been happy as fuck all day over it. Like, it's
That's so awesome.
Absolutely amazing. Like, oh my God.
Well, speaking of my son having his name be Orion after a Jack Kirby character, my daughter was actually born on Stan Lee's birthday.
And oh, so wow. I've got both of them. Now, I'd say you got both the architect of comics in the next generation there. Before we get out of here, I know you got a lot of stuff to do, more books to write. So I got to ask, we talked about Kickstarter. So when is that coming? When's Boneheads coming? When can people expect it? And then also I got to ask, do you have an idea of how many issues you're planning on doing? Or is it more of you're going to do it as long as it's fun?
No, I actually, it's going to be 5 issues. I've already got the first 3 written with the 4th and 5th mapped out. That is going to be all for the main Boneheads title, but I would, because the band, which you'll meet in the second issue, I want them to have their own little one-shots because they're my favorite character. Like, Shithead Steve was written years ago. He is the sweetest, nicest, most wholesome person you'll ever meet. So his name's kind of a misnomer. But I'd like to do one shots on them. But we've got 5 issues set up that I've got planned out with most of it written. As far as when we release, we're looking, we've got fingers crossed for June as far as getting close to completion. Like I said, I think Greg is on the last 7 or 8 pages for art now. Once he gets those done, I'll have Joel do the letters. So really, we just got Barlow working his little hands off, catching up on colors. But like I said, once I have the art and the letters completely done, we're going to talk some more about release date. But I'd like the book to be, like I said, as close to being able to print as possible. Mm-hmm. But like I said, we're shooting for June, but the kind of deadline that we set for ourselves is mid-July. And so we'll probably open up the pre-launch page, probably looking at end of May. End of May would probably be about when we're gonna do the pre-launch page. And we'll definitely be doing some more press stuff then. And if y'all wanna have me back on, I'm available anytime. Mostly because I don't have people to talk to comics about. But no, so yeah, like I said, we're looking for a summer release this year. And the way that I'm setting up the Kickstarter is I've already put in, like I said, I set the money aside to pay the creators beforehand. And so the Kickstarter itself is funding shipping and printing. And anything extra that we have goes directly into the next book. And so your faith in this Kickstarter is your faith in the series, because if this is successful, all that money goes into the next book and lather, rinse, repeat. But please repeat.
Please repeat this time.
So yeah, that's the plan. We're looking at a summer release, mid-July at the latest, early June at the soonest. And I'll be able to give you a little bit more information on it the closer we get.
Beautiful.
That's the plan for now.
Beautiful. I love it. Everyone that's watching and listening to this, make sure you keep an eye on the Kickstarter. Wait for the announcement. We will be on top of it as the journey goes on. And when the Kickstarter goes live, I will be putting that in the description. So if you watch this video right now and it's not there yet, come check back later. I will, like I said, update that when that becomes available. Again, make sure you go and back Boneheads. I really love the preview pages that you so gratefully sent to us. So I'm for sure going to back it. And again, just thank you so much for coming to Nerding Out with us. This has been a long time coming, and our door is always open for you, my friend. We will for sure circle back around once the Kickstarter goes up. Keep people up to date. We would love to have you anytime.
Sure. And I had a blast as well. Thank you all so much for having me on. And yeah, anytime, whether it's Boneheads related or not, just let me know and I'll come and nerd out with y'all.
Hey, let's just talk some shit about Kirby and stuff. Let's do it.
Talk shit about Kirby.
He's like, no, I'm not coming back.
Tell all of our listeners where to find you and where we can find the USSR stickers that I hear being made exclusively, the USSRI stickers that are going to be coming out in the Kickstarter package. Hint, hint, I really need one in my life, homie. Y'all can't steal that band name from him either, by the way. I will hunt you down. Yeah, that
we have trademark.
To him.
Trademark right now.
That's right. Tell the people where to find you.
You can find me on Twitter. It'll be the Ultimate Warrior, but I think it's at 40Ounce_Goose, which I think is the same for Blue Sky as well as Reds for people who have left the Bastard X site. But you can find me at, and same on Instagram, at 40Ounce_Goose. You can find me at all of those places and come and see what we've got for you.
Awesome. And I'll also be putting all of Colton's socials in the description as well. So again, don't even have to leave the video. Just go on below, click the link, and you can find all the good stuff that Colton's doing, all the updates about Bonehead. Again, this has been so much fun. I hope that we can do it again soon, which we for sure will. I hope all of you guys at home enjoyed watching this and listening to this. If you did, please consider giving us a like and subscribe. It really helps us out. And also go over to bcwsupplies.com and use code SONSOFMILNIR for 10% off all of your bags, boards, anything you need to collect. We got you covered. 10% off. Again, that code is SONSOFMILNIR. We hope that you guys all have a fantastic week. Hope you stay hydrated. Your stacks are fat, and we will see you guys all next time.
Take your SSRIs, you boneheads. It's been wonderful.
你要去扫地。